He was standing in the doorway, slumped against the frame, gaunt and haggard and stinking like shit. His clothes were soaked and he was dripping on the floor. His beard had grown in coarse red patches. And his eyes were like a dead man, flat gray and without focus. She raked her knuckles against her eyes. She didn't believe it. The specter stayed.
"Hello, Sparrow,"
grated Blackbird. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off as Lee and Haytham crawl through the sewers into the edge. They have a fateful encounter with the family Lee left behind below the city. If you missed last episode or any other, I will leave a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, along with links to a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. All right, I will get out of my own way. Let's get down to the good stuff. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Colosseum. The city never smelled so sweet. Haytham kept a tight rein on his emotions as he limped toward the tunnel mouth. He'd kept a hand on the girl's shoulder the whole way up, the fire-hardened spear point leveled at her back in case she tried to bolt. Only once he could make out the sheen of lamplight on the tunnel sludge did he let the weapon drop to his side. The dark shelf of clouds still hung low and pregnant over the city, obscuring the bell tower of a nearby church. No rain, yet. The girl looked doubtfully up at the clouds as Haytham sidled past her and dragged himself up onto the alley floor, taking care not to carve himself up on the broken grate.
"You should stay up above tonight," he heard the boy murmur. "If it rains before you can make it back down, then you'll have killed me,"
the girl shot back. The boy's pale profile swam into view between the jagged teeth at the tunnel mouth, looking back at the girl hidden in the dark. The brawler offered a hand to help him up. Lee didn't take it.
"I'm sorry. When I imagined seeing you again, I hoped it wouldn't go like this. How's that?"
He swallowed.
"Badly."
Haytham could barely hear her whisper above the distant rush of the Jackson somewhere to the north.
"How else could it have gone, Princey?"
Lee didn't answer.
"You belong to the up above now," she continued. "And I belong."
"You don't belong to him."
"I belong with my brothers and sisters. Our brothers and sisters."
Another long beat.
"I don't blame you for running. Don't blame me for going back."
The boy's face disappeared deeper into the tunnel. Haytham grit his teeth and peered down the alley in both directions. The only living thing nearby was a milk chaser slumped over in the gutter some 20 yards down. He caught a faint whiff of that burning flower smell lingering on the heavy air. Lee reappeared in the darkness, and Haytham reached for him again.
"I left something there for you,"
the boy muttered before taking the brawler's hand. The girl didn't say anything, but Haytham thought he could feel her gaze on their backs as they retreated toward the river. Halfway down the alley, the boy turned on his heel and darted back to the broken grate. Haytham tried to catch his wrist as he ran, but already he was out of reach, bare feet skidding on the slick cobbles before he dropped to his knees at the tunnel mouth.
"I never stopped thinking about you," he called down into the darkness. "Not one day, not ever."
He said more in the crude speech of the Undercity, but Haytham was too tired and too embarrassed to try and parse it out. He limped over and put a hand on the boy's shoulder.
"She's gone, Lee."
The boy's eyes gleamed in the light from a nearby window when he stood up. He dabbed them dry on his sleeve. Even after, he wouldn't quite meet the brawler's eye. Haytham's heart went out to him. From the moment he'd met the boy, he'd seen Lee's eagerness to grow up, to make something of himself. And in their black dealings with the spider, Lee had acquitted himself well, such that Haytham had almost been able to forget that he was still barely on the edge of manhood. In some ways, and it had taken until tonight for Haytham to understand why, he was still very much a child. For the first time since he'd tossed the fat man off the cliff and learned about Lee's early deception, he felt nothing but deep affection for the boy. They'd both come from nothing and clawed their way hand over hand out of the gutter using the only means they had. Haytham wondered how his life might have gone differently if he'd had a Paul in those early years, if he'd had someone like himself. He felt that he was supposed to say something, to offer a bit of encouragement to the boy.
"You're better off,"
he muttered, and meant it. Failed loves at 16 were a part of growing up. Lee didn't look particularly heartened by this, but he sniffed and nodded.
"What next?"
He nudged Hatham's injured leg with his toe.
You should let Paul have a look at that.
The brawler bit his lip. He didn't tell the boy that he had no illusions of living long enough for the infection to set in. Every hour that slipped by increased the risk that the spider or the brethren or the gray cloaks caught wind of him, doubly so once day broke. He had to get in, and get in quickly, simple and straight. He flicked his finger against the blackened mess of the boy's mangled ear. Lee winced.
Have her look at that first.
He set his face toward the east-facing alley. The torch-bug lights of Cliffside glowed steadily, not twinkling.
Eat. Change your clothes. Get some rest.
He started down the alley, away from the mismatched house.
Meet outside hers in an hour.
He felt the boy's gaze on the back of his neck until he rounded the corner out of sight. Amethyst strained at the stiff brass clasps, wishing bitterly that the 10-stone lead weight in her belly made it any easier to close the damned valise. Any doubts she'd had about leaving had vanished that morning on the sanctuary steps. She couldn't stay. There were too many memories, the good and the bad, which would suck her down into the pit. She didn't know whether she could outrun them on an eastbound caravan, but could her if she wouldn't try. The first wagon east, it didn't matter where. If the merchantess from the Whitewood wouldn't take her, then Fjallengard or Blackport or a bloody mud hut on the River Sin. She'd nearly tried to leave early. Her last exchange with White Rose had so chilled her that she'd convinced herself that he'd be there waiting for her when she arrived at the lift. She'd have been a sorry sight, she knew, clad in funeral clothes, her only luggage, the fiddle case, stuffed full of crowns, tear-streaked and stinking of vomit. She'd be inviting all kinds of unwanted attention, from thieves and rapers both. She'd held herself together long enough to go to the money changers to obtain a receipt of deposit for 39 crowns 5, all her wealth in the world besides what she'd saved to pay her fare, plus any incidental expenses on the road. After that, she'd asked Finch if he had any old friends left from his soldiering days who she could hire on as a chaperone. In the end, she found one. He seemed respectable enough, and he'd impressed her with his mercenary pedigree, a founding member of the Windwolves before he'd left to chase a girl west of the Jaw. All that was left was to pack, and it had very nearly undone her. She'd spent half the night stuffing clothes into her valise, and the other half with her head in the chamber pot. Every time she closed her eyes, it was the same. The bit of gristle dangling as the executioner raised high his grisly charge, the torrent that gushed down the steps and dragged her under. She glanced at the decanter on its silver tray on her little end table. There was a fine layer of dust over it and the crystal glasses now. The temptation to lose herself in her cups was strong, but she pushed it down. She had a wagon to catch. She adjusted her perch on top of the valise and yanked the clasp with both hands. The stubborn clasp snapped closed, square on the webbing between her thumb and forefinger. She yelped and fell backward off the valise, sucking blood from the gash. The copper taste made her stomach knot. She almost bolted for the washroom down the hall. She closed her eyes and willed the nausea to subside. The executioner hefted his awful prize, his dripping arm crimson to the elbow. Blood sprayed across the crowd's ravenous faces. They screamed with rapture. She tasted bile and lunged for the door. Her eyes snapped open. She screamed. He was standing in the doorway, slumped against the frame, gaunt and haggard and stinking like shit. His clothes were soaked, and he was dripping on the floor. His beard had grown in coarse red patches. And his eyes. His eyes were like a dead man, flat gray and without focus. She raked her knuckles against her eyes. She didn't believe it. The specter stayed.
Hello, Sparrow.
Grated Blackbird. She said his name, but didn't go to him. She'd prayed for this. She knew she ought to feel relief, joy, awe, something other than the dull horror that was growing like a mold at the bottom of her belly. She wanted to ask him how this was even possible. She'd seen it. Seen the drop. What came out was, "You're all wet." He shuffled 2 steps into the attic and nearly fell. He steadied himself on the edge of her four-poster. He left wet, gray boot prints on the floor.
"I tried to wash off," he told her.
He took another step toward her, and she fought her first impulse to flinch away. She still didn't entirely believe it, that her frayed nerves hadn't finally snapped under the strain. She took his hand in her uninjured one, tracing her thumb against the thick calluses.
"Should I bother asking?" she muttered. "How you're alive?"
"They hang someone else. Under my name."
Her mind flashed to the thing Elias had said to her after the drop. She'd woken up lying on a plush velvet couch in the gallery. The roar of the crowd through the closed doors made the glass rattle in its frame. There was a servant standing by with a glass of water and a fan, and White Rose was standing over her.
"I could have had you hanged beside him."
"Why didn't you?"
She pushed the memory away before she could hear his reply.
"Where have you been?"
she asked the brawler, crossing to the open door. She wondered if anyone had heard her scream.
"How did you get out of the jail?"
"I shouldn't have come,"
he said to her back. Her teeth were clenched. When she closed the door, it felt as if she were signing her own death writ. If anyone found out that he was here...
"No," she agreed, turning to face him. "But as long as you're here..."
She looked him up and down.
"Take off your clothes."
He didn't move. She looked meaningfully at his right leg. The canvas was stained red just below the knee.
"As handsome as you'd look with a peg. If you'd like to avoid one, you should let me look at that."
He shook his head. His eyes were red-rimmed and sunken, and he was terribly pale.
"No, I came to make sure you're safe."
She shrugged, her arms splayed, and looked down at herself. She glanced up at him expectantly, a strained smile on her lips. She nodded to him as she reached behind her back for the door handle.
"Take off your clothes."
She left the door slightly cracked, and she pushed it open with one foot when she returned with her haul from the kitchen. The cook had given her a strange look when she asked for his biggest mixing bowl full of warm suds and every rag he could spare. Thankfully, he wasn't the sort to ask questions. Haytham was sitting on the edge of the bed in his damp small clothes, his head tipped against the bedpost. She tried not to gape at the mess of scabs and bruises on his chest and arms. His shoulder was red and swollen. He'd lost weight, and his skin was mottled with a scaly red rash. Even without his wounded leg, it was a small miracle that he'd been on his feet at all. She winced at the sudden pang of guilt. His eyes were closed, and for a moment she thought he'd fallen asleep.
"You're leaving,"
he muttered without opening his eyes, gesturing to the two matching valises near the door. The third one lay in the middle of the floor where she'd left it.
"I decided to take your advice,"
she said, setting down the mixing bowl at the foot of the bed. She drew up the desk chair in front of him.
"I haven't any catgut, so we'll just have to make do with tying it off tight."
"Where are you going?"
She didn't answer. She picked up his sodden rags and wrinkled her nose.
"I'll need those,"
he murmured as she dropped them in the waste bin. She turned her back to him and crossed to the little end table. Beside the decanter, there was a clear vial she'd sought from the apothecary to help with sleep.
"I'll just have you wear one of my dresses,"
she teased, blowing dust out of one of the glasses. He didn't laugh.
"There's an old pair of your breeches in the wardrobe,"
she said, motioning with the glass before she pressed it into his hand. Her injured hand left a smear of blood on the side. He shook his head and tried to hand back the liquor. The sweet-smelling Kadari brandy twisted her stomach in knots.
"I need a clear head,"
he protested.
"Shut up and drink it."
He stared at his reflection in the glass for a moment before gulping it down. She went to work slowly with the rag, working her way down from his battered face. He told her again that he'd tried to wash off in the canal before slipping in the back way, but he wouldn't answer when she asked him how he'd ended up covered head to toe in filth.
"You smell like shit,"
she informed him, and she surreptitiously added a few drops of her favorite perfume to the suds. If he noticed the cinnamon and lavender smell rising off the soapy water, he didn't say.
"Where are you going?"
She was dressing the wound on his calf.
"East. I leave in a few hours."
She thought about saying more, but she stopped herself.
"Where are you going?"
He caught her by the hand, and she looked up into his eyes. They kept unfocusing and refocusing as he fought to stay awake.
"You know where,"
he muttered.
"Haytham."
She pulled away from him. His eyes didn't follow her.
"When will it be enough? You can't keep doing this. You tried and you lost. By some act of God, you're still alive. But if you keep going, you're going to run yourself into the grave and drag everyone close to you down with you."
She heard Elias's voice in her ear.
"I could have had you hanged there beside him."
"Why didn't you?" a kindness to the man I was. He loved you, the fool.
She had sat up on the couch and tried to stand. Elias stepped between her and the door, his face cold and proud.
It's good that you're leaving,
the brawler muttered, dashing the memory. She'd finished tying off the bandage before she spoke again.
Come with me,
she heard herself say. She could barely admit it, even to herself, but she didn't want him to. Everything that was coming with her had to fit in 3 valises and the fiddle case. She loved him, and she hated what he'd done to her. But she was also afraid to leave him, afraid of what he'd do, afraid that he'd try for White Rose again and fail, and that there'd be a troop of soldiers waiting to arrest her at Erling. Afraid that Elias would make good on the last threat he'd made before she escaped down the stairs and fled back to the Eidolon.
I can keep an eye on you, she told the brawler, patting his leg, and make sure this heals right. If you want to turn back after Erling, I won't stop you.
If he left then, she'd be in the mountains by the time he made it back to the edge. She could disappear into the foothills if White Rose tried to give chase. Hatham's eyes were closed, his head tipped against the bedpost.
We knew it would end this way.
It's not fair.
She felt her throat tighten, and she busied herself putting away the chair and the mixing bowl so he wouldn't see her cry.
It's not fair that you came back into my life, that you pushed me into a corner, that you made me love you again.
Her face grew hot. The words were out before she could stop them. She was like a boulder rolling down a mountain, gathering speed.
If it were me, I'd have stayed away. I'd have done it because I loved you. Because you shouldn't have any part of this life. I was happy before. And I admit, I deserve some of the blame for choosing you too, but...
She let out a choked sob.
Cirrus above, Hatham, why did I let you do this?
He didn't answer. Her knuckles were white around the back of the desk chair, anchoring her. She wiped her eyes on her sleeve. A thud behind her. The half-drunk tumbler had slipped from between his fingers and rolled under the bed. He didn't reach for it. The 3 drops of laudanum in his brandy was doing its work. His head was slumped to his chest. She picked up the mixing bowl and the rags and looked back at him only once before slipping out the door and down the stairs.
I'm sorry, Blackbird,
she breathed. She couldn't let him drag her down with him. Elias's last words echoed in her mind all the way down to the kitchen.
Make no mistake, Em, he'd sworn. Your life is mine. If you ever so much as look at me slantways, I'll have you stripped, whipped, and handed over to the jailers.
She looked him in the eyes, and she believed him.
They'll pass you around the cells like a wineskin, then feed whatever's left to the pigs.
Twice in one night, Miss Amatha,
came the cook's booming bass chuckle over the scrape of steel wool against his pan.
Fortune smiles on an old man this eve.
His voice faltered when he saw the tears.
Yoram,
she choked, barely loud enough to hear herself over the fire crackling in the stove.
Get the gray cloaks.
The brandy was stronger than he'd thought. That, or he was more tired than he realized. It felt like he'd been dipped in warm honey, his eyelids, his shoulders, his forehead all dripping into a dark pool of dreamless sleep. He heard the door snick closed many miles away, and he gasped awake. His pulse galloped in his ears, and for a moment his eyes rolled uncomprehendingly before the room took shape. That viscous, dripping, warm honey feeling stayed.
How long was I out?
He slurred.
Not long, she murmured. A few minutes.
He started to rise. She darted across the room and kissed him, long and deep, her thumbs trailing across the stiff bristles of his beard. She gently pushed him back down onto the four-poster.
You should sleep, she breathed. He'll still be there in the morning.
Again. The boy is waiting.
His eyes were glassy and half-closed. His hands were cupping her thighs.
The boy will be there too,
he heard her say. The mattress found his back. Her breath was warm against his neck.
You need your strength, Blackbird.
Almost of their own accord, his fingers traced the shape of her. Her rump, her hips, the hollow of her waist. They found the hard line of her stiletto tucked into the laces of her bodice. His tongue felt like dry leather.
I need my clothes,
he breathed. He rolled her onto her back, kissed her, and stood up, steadying himself on the bedpost. He tried to rub the sleep out of his eyes. The room spun in lazy circles, and he stumbled over to the wardrobe, which was ajar and mostly empty. He found his breeches folded in a neat bundle and pulled them on, nearly falling before he caught himself on the edge of the wardrobe. There was a looking glass hanging inside one of the doors, and out of the corner of his eye he caught her reflection in it. She was looking at his back, her nostrils flared, her teeth clenched. She looked ill.
"Are you all right?"
She forced a smile and nodded. "Just afraid for you is all." She glanced at the hallway door. "Have you eaten?"
"I'll be fine."
"Are you sure? The cook's still up."
"Can I borrow this?"
He'd pulled an old cloak from one of the hooks and swept it around his shoulders. It was snug in the arms and came down barely past the knees, but it was warm enough, and it would keep his wings from flashing at every milk chaser on the way to Paul's. She dismissed the question. He scooped his wet boots off the floor and sat on the desk chair.
"Don't put those on yet," she told him.
"Come
here."
She held a hand out to him. Outside, a few early drops began to patter against the window. He sighed and crossed to her, his one boot thumping irregularly against the floorboards. She kissed him tenderly, and she started working at the laces of his breeches.
"What are you?"
She kissed him again, hard and hungry.
"I can't."
She pulled her face away from his and stared seriously into his eyes, her hands around his neck.
"This may be the last time I ever see you."
Her gaze flitted back and forth between his eyes.
"Are you gonna tell me no?"
He didn't.
She was kissing his neck when he caught a glimpse of himself in the wardrobe mirror. It was the first time he'd seen himself since they jailed him. His back and arms were scaly and red in huge patches, and where there wasn't a rash, his skin had been stained dark by weeks of caked filth. He looked like something that had crawled out of hell. He could smell himself. Over the scent of her perfume, he still stank unmistakably like shit. And she was kissing him. And then he saw her face. It was hard and dispassionate, like a whore working her stall. It melted into a look of soft bemusement when he pulled away from her.
"Is something wrong?"
He shook his head.
We have to stop."
"What do you mean?"
She squeezed him with her thighs when he tried to stand.
"Don't do this. Don't go."
He pried her knees apart and withdrew. It was raining in earnest now. She'd sat up in the bed, looking affronted. Her face was flushed, her neck spotted with love bites. Her bodice lay open on the edge of the bed where she'd flung it. The shirt she wore beneath it was loose and transparent. Her eyes flitted to the door for half an instant before she looked back at him. The room was spinning again. He rubbed his eyes and tried to blink sleep away.
He remembered this feeling, but he couldn't quite place it.
She murmured something, but he couldn't make it out. She'd climbed off the bed and was looking up at him again.
"Did you drug me?"
She glanced at the door again.
"What are you talking about? You're exhausted. You need to sleep."
She tried to take his hand again. He caught her by the wrist. Her pulse was frantic beneath his fingers.
"You told someone."
She kept coming in and out of focus. There was one of her, now three, and he hunted for the stillness the monks had taught him as his faculties continued to slip. The three amethas coalesced into one.
"You're looking for enemies where there are none."
"You told someone."
"You're hurting me."
He flung her hand away, and immediately she scrambled to put as much of the room between them as she could. The brawler had caught hold of the stillness by his fingertips, and he advanced on her with sure-footed purpose.
"What did he offer you? Gold?"
She tried to open the door. He slammed it with the flat of his hand.
"Patronage."
She slipped under his arm and backed away again.
"I won't ask again."
She was trembling, and she wouldn't meet his eye. It wasn't the monk's training that was holding him together now. He could feel battle fire thrumming in his fingertips.
"He threatened me,"
she murmured after a moment.
"He told me that if I did anything to harm him..."
Hatham snarled and smashed his fist into one of the bedposts. Amethyst screamed. The thick beam splintered with a crack like thunder, and the whole frame sagged. His chest heaved. He hardly felt his hand, blood dripping from his split knuckles. She flinched when he looked at her.
"I never wanted to hurt you," she gasped. "You have to believe me."
"I trusted you,"
he spat, advancing on her again. She scrambled to put the four-poster between them.
"You can still get out,"
she said, motioning wildly toward the window.
The gray cloaks are on their way. You can leave by the window.
He'd swept around the bed and was coming toward her. She flung herself on the mattress and clawed the knife out of her bodice. She brandished it at him as she clambered to her feet.
Stay away from me.
He scowled and threw his arms wide, inviting her to take a swing. She didn't move. The knife point trembled before she let it drop to her side. There was hate in her eyes.
You're just like him,
she whispered. He'd have rather she stabbed him. He forced his hands to go slack and felt the flames of his rage die down a little. It left him even more exhausted than he'd been before. He turned and crossed to the window, scooping the cloak off the floor and slinging it over his shoulder. He pushed the window open. Through the rain, he could make out the flash of Keeper's steel in the light from the second floor windows above the shops. Amitha pressed her attack.
You put me through hell, Haytham. I think you knew you would, but you came anyway.
That's not what I wanted.
He could barely hear himself over the rain.
Me neither, but you knew what would happen. We both did.
He looked back. She was sitting on the edge of the bed, her eyes bright with tears.
You'd have to choose, and you wouldn't choose me. Well, I'm choosing me.
She broke his heart. He knew she wasn't wrong. He'd known it from the beginning, and would only tangle things up. When he'd lain there next to her after love, there'd always been that unspoken question in her eyes. It had been then, more than any time in these 7 years, that he'd dreamed of throwing away his vengeance and chasing the girl into the daylight. He knew he couldn't.
Do you know what I was thinking at the hanging? She whispered. I thought, that's twice I've lost him without saying goodbye.
She stood and approached him slowly, cautiously, like a wild thing. The rain was pattering on his shoulders, but he let her come close. She came up on her tiptoes to kiss him. She smelled sweet.
Goodbye, Blackbird.
The knife slid between his ribs. Almost. His fingers knit around her wrist an instant before the blade slid home. Had he been rested, he'd have turned the thrust entirely, but he was groggy and slow, and the knife point nipped his rib and drew a gasp from the brawler. Blood welled from the tiny gash and seeped down his side, enveloping the old scar. The color drained from her face. He felt her try to drop the stiletto, but his grip was iron.
Do you think I'm a fool?
The Reaper breathed. She gasped as he twisted the knife toward her, the tendons in her wrist standing out, stark and white. She screamed and beat at his chest with her free hand. He caught that too.
Please, she sobbed. Please don't.
Hobnail boots thundered up the stairs, rough male voices down the hall.
They're here. There's still time if you crawl down the drain pipe.
I'm not leaving.
The knife touched her chest. Lightning flashed outside, and the whole room was lit up dazzling white. Her eyes were bright and green and terrified. Tears cut parallel diamond tracks down her cheeks. He didn't hear her over the answering thunderclap.
To choose, she was saying as it faded. Me or Elias?
A crimson circle bloomed on the white cotton as the knife point bit her skin.
Goodbye, Sparrow.
Haytham rasped. The stiletto thumped into the floorboards between her feet. She'd been straining to pull away from him, and she fell back against the four-poster when he dropped her hands. He didn't look back. The sill was cold under his hands, and his feet slid as he felt for purchase on the rain-slick tiles. The gutter sagged under his weight, and he crawled as quickly as he could toward the drainpipe without going headlong over the side. The drainpipe was as slick as anything, and he made it only halfway down before he lost his grip and fell the last 20 feet or so. Thankfully, there were shrubs planted along the sides of the Eidolon, and he only sliced his back and shoulders to ribbons before landing with a wet smack on the cobbles. He clambered, groaning, out of the bush and hobbled down the alley before anyone could spot him. A figure stepped out of a shadowed alcove, his features hidden beneath his drawn hood. He filled the narrow alley ahead of the brawler. That familiar Kadari lilt made Haytham's hackles rise.
You move, you die.
He glared at the brawler down the length of the stalk. Haytham slowly raised his hands in surrender. Thank you guys so much for listening. We are quickly approaching the end of this story. It has been an absolutely wild ride, so thank you if you've been following from the beginning. As always, it is a huge help if you're on YouTube to leave a like or a comment on the video, and if you're listening on podcast, you can do me a favor by leaving a 5-star review. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you next week for episode 53. Same time, same place. I'll see you then.